The small and deeply poor city of Sparta, Georgia, made national headlines this week. A lawsuit claims that last year, the Hancock County Board of Elections systemically questioned the registrations of nearly 200 Sparta voters, most of them black. And when we say systemically, we mean the board sent sheriff's deputies to people's doors and served them with a summons ordering them to appear and prove their residency. A quarter of those voters were purged from the rolls as a result. And note, I did not say allegedly. The county attorney acknowledges that this did happen. He says it was simply an effort to crack down on fraud and sloppiness. But the lawsuit alleges that county officials did this in order to allow for the election of a white mayor in Sparta, which is exactly what happened. Prior to 2013, of course, this move by Hancock County would have required pre-clearance under the Voting Rights Act, meaning they would have needed to get approval from the federal government before doing anything. But as you'll recall, the Supreme Court effectively struck down that requirement, leading to a wave of voting procedure changes across the South and other places. But in the last few weeks, the tide seems to have turned again as courts have struck down voter ID requirements in North Carolina and other states. Here to talk about all this is attorney Brian Sells. He used to work in the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. He now has his own firm focusing on voting rights cases. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Adam. Pleasure to be with you.
First of all, what's your reaction to the Sparta story?
It's horrifying, but more importantly, it is the poster child for the kind of voting change that would have been stopped by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act that you just described, that would have required Sparta to get pre-clearance from the Department of Justice before implementing this kind of a voter purge.
I want to play a clip here. This is from Hancock attorney Barry Fleming. He says that the county had good reason to challenge the voting credentials of these nearly 200 voters. Let's listen.
Someone tried to bring up to date the voter rolls in the county and get dead people and people who didn't live there off the voter rolls, and the lawsuit was brought to prevent that.
Interesting. So, Brian Sells, I mean, there are some legitimate cases in which fraud or just bad record keeping necessitates a community to maybe even go door to door and check people's registrations and make sure that their residencies are current, right?
Well, I'm not sure going door to door just before an election and at least as is alleged in the lawsuit, targeting black voters. And, you know, Section 5 would not have prevented Sparta or any other town or county from cleaning up its voter rolls in an appropriate, non-discriminatory way. All Section 5 would have done is held the city's feet to the fire a little bit, required them to justify what they were doing, and to ensure that it was done in a non-discriminatory way.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, the big thing about this particular case and the reason that it ended up in the New York Times is that it wasn't just anyone who went door to door. The County Board of Elections in Hancock County actually sent sheriff's deputies, which, whether they intended it to be this way or not, would have been pretty – I mean, I'd be pretty intimidated if a sheriff's deputy came to my door and asked me to prove anything about myself, you know?
Well, that's right. The usual way for engaging in list maintenance is to send out a postcard. And you don't send sheriff's deputies, you don't send highway patrolmen. It's very intimidating to have that kind of knock on your door.
Right. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Do you think that voter discrimination is still a problem today? Should the Supreme Court restore this provision to the 1965 Voting Rights Act? Tweet us at OST Talk or join our conversation happening at facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. We're talking to civil rights lawyer Brian Sells. And Brian, let's turn and talk about voter ID laws. The Federal Appeals Court recently striking down the voter ID requirement in North Carolina. Many similar cases happening in states across the country just in the last few weeks. States with voter ID laws. What's going on? Why is this happening all at once?
Well, it's happening all at once to make sure that the rules are set well in advance of the election. The Supreme Court in earlier election years established the rule that voting challenges that happen too close to the election don't get to be made. And so the reason why I think we saw this flurry of cases last week or over the last 2 weeks is because of that rule that says, and it's a common sense rule, that you don't want to be changing the rules of an election very close to the election, because you have to have time to get the word out, you have to be able to train poll workers, and so on. But the other reason why we're seeing this flurry of activity is because there was a wave of restrictive laws put in place right after the Supreme Court struck down Section 5. In fact, the day after Supreme Court struck down Section 5 in 2013 in the Shelby County case, Texas announced that it was going to re-implement its voter ID provision. And it just takes some time for those kinds of cases to work their ways through the courts, and a number of them were working their way through the courts over the last 3 years and were ready for a decision about this time.
Indeed, but for them to be adjudicated now so close to the presidential election, is that a function of, do you think it was the courts themselves moving the cases up on the docket in order to get them settled in advance of the election? Or is this the plaintiffs, like the ACLU, coordinating work to try to get all of this done before the presidential election?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. In I think just about every case that you've mentioned, courts have specifically checked with the states involved in North Carolina, for example, and in Texas, and got the states to indicate when they would need a decision by in order to implement a remedy for this election. And so the courts were mindful of those deadlines and tried to meet them.
Right. Okay. I mean, I ask because voter ID laws, generally speaking, the research, empirical data has shown that they tend to drive down minority turnout and thus have a negative effect for Democratic candidates. We're now seeing this flurry of court decisions striking down voter ID laws in advance of the presidential election. The effect of those decisions is likely going to, if it benefits any candidate, it's going to benefit Democratic candidates. Why shouldn't Republicans feel like this is a little bit fishy?
Well, I don't think Republicans should feel like it's fishy if it's eligible voters voting. I mean, that's what elections are for.
Right. So let's talk about the Shelby versus Holder decision. This is the 2013 decision that effectively struck down the preclearance requirement.
Okay.
I mean, the what we were talking about after that happened was that, in effect, the Voting Rights Act would be rather toothless. But does this recent wave of court decisions indicate that that's not the case, that, in fact, the remaining provisions of the Voting Rights Act have a lot of power and still work?
Well, I think yes and no. The cases that we've seen in the last couple of weeks show that there are other mechanisms available to challenge this sort of vote suppression activity. But it also demonstrates that those kinds of cases take a long time. They take years, and they're very expensive. And Congress passed Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act to shift that kind of burden away from the victims of voting discrimination and onto the perpetrators. And the Supreme Court's decision in 2013 overrode that intention of Congress, and so it's much harder now to bring these sorts of changes. And I'll also note that we saw a couple of that these changes or challenges that we saw coming down in the last couple of weeks were to very high-profile statewide laws.
Right.
And the national organizations were all over those, along with the Department of Justice. But as the Sparta case illustrates, and there are potentially others out there, smaller changes don't get quite the attention that the larger ones do. And there could be other jurisdictions that are engaging in vote suppression that just haven't gotten the sunlight and attention that the statewide cases have gotten.
Right, yeah. So let's say that Hillary Clinton is elected president in November, as the polls are indicating is a pretty likely outcome at this point. She appoints some more left-leaning justices to the Supreme Court. Is it possible for the Shelby versus Holder decision to be revisited in some way?
It's possible, but I'd say probably unlikely for a couple of reasons. Number one is that Supreme Court justices are very hesitant to undo recent decisions made by the Supreme Court, even if they disagree with them. That's called stare decisis, and it's not a rule of law, but it's something that judges intend to follow to ensure the stability of law. The other reason is it's difficult to imagine how that kind of a case would get up to the Supreme Court. It's just hard to imagine how a plaintiff would be able to set that question before the court. I think much more likely is a reenactment or reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act in some form. There are a number of proposals now pending in Congress, and if there is a President Clinton and perhaps a more moderate Congress, perhaps that those kinds of legislation could get through.
That's Brian Sells. He's a civil rights lawyer and a principal of the law offices of Brian Sells. Brian, thank you so much for your insight.